CliffCentral.com.
Ah, yes. Good morning, everybody.
I pressed the wrong button.
But it's fine.
It happens.
I got the right one eventually. All right, so here we are. We're live. It's Monday morning. It's just about the last day of May. Yeah, it is the last day of May. Right? Jesus, we're useless. No, tomorrow's the last day of May. Alright, well, that took us a long time to figure out. You'd think we'd know. Yeah. Here we are. Alright, so people streaming in from all over the place, and actually today, for the first time, we are also streaming live on Twitter and Facebook. So you know, try that out and see how it works. See if it's a good thing or a bad thing or an ugly thing. Someone listening to us all the way from Bulgaria, believe it or not. Sean says, good morning from a sunny Bulgaria. I mean, how's that? Who's in Bulgaria besides Sean? I mean, what a place to be. What are you doing there, dude? Yeah. I want to know what you do in Bulgaria. That's pretty wild. And then people from all over the place. So let's get cracking. We got lots to do, people to see, places to go, things to talk about this morning. You know, everybody is still going on about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, because now obviously it's closing arguments. And so they're coming up to do their final cross-examinations and all the rest of it. I've got to be honest with you, I haven't seen any of it, but I got an update yesterday from, of all people, my sister, who's watching. She says it's fascinating. I mean, even just from the point of view of law, she says it's amazing, because these lawyers are... You know, the stuff you don't learn in law school is like how to get your witness riled up. How to make them sneeze. How to give them a cold. Why do I have
just
a cold?
Off the cuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have to learn all this shit, right? So she said that's the amazing part of it. Have you been watching any?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing. And the best thing about closing arguments is that it's a summary of everything that's gone on during the case.
Right.
So we've been fed little bits, and sometimes it's difficult to follow everything unless you're following it all. But yeah, I tell you what, Amber Heard's been painted as the biggest liar ever.
Yeah.
I think for me, the biggest part was where she referred to a bruise kit by mistake. She meant to say, I used makeup to cover up my bruise.
Yeah.
But she said the word bruise kit. Now, a bruise kit is a specific kit that you get for theatrical acting, or it's like movie makeup.
Oh, wow.
And it's a little quadrant with these colors that include yellow. So that's why the bruise kit is very distinctive.
Okay.
Because it includes yellow. And that's what is used to create a realistic looking bruise. And in one of the photographs that was put into evidence, it certainly wasn't the subject of the photograph. But in the corner, you can see a bruise kit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She's left it on the table. And here is this little palette, including the yellow.
Sure.
So she actually went out and created these bruises on her face. She went to the police station and laid reports. They were all completely false.
Oof.
Johnny Depp is looking like a star at the moment.
Apparently,
and has so many
apparently
fans on
even
his side.
Even he, when he gave his testimony, right, the second time or whatever. People are saying, for a great actor like this, he fluffed it a little bit. I mean, like he wasn't as great as they thought he would be, and she's been lying a lot through this, as you rightly point out. But it's also interesting because she apparently, for someone who was taking pictures of everything, including Johnny Depp passed out, the one thing she failed to take a picture of was herself straight after this alleged incident. And you would think that would be the first thing that someone like her would do, right?
The thing is, so let's pretend she's telling the truth, which she's not, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I've been at the receiving end of a couple of blows to the face.
Right.
In an abusive relationship.
Right.
And what was very interesting is that I didn't, the first thing was not to take a picture. That crossed my mind. It wasn't, I was embarrassed, ashamed, shocked. So I didn't take a picture. It was only when my brother came to meet me and he said, we need to take photographs.
Ooh.
So when you're in that moment, you're very shocked. It's almost like those movies you see where the woman wants to have a shower after being raped.
Yes.
She doesn't think, let's collect the evidence. It's that sort of mindset. You're in a completely different world. But this is not what happened with Amber Heard.
Sure. Well, apparently, according to Conga Chris, the makeup company that uses and makes the kit said that she's lying. They came out and said she couldn't have used that cover kit because they only brought it to market 2 years after she said she used it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Tracy says the makeup that she used to cover some of her bruises wasn't even being manufactured yet when she claimed the assaults took place. So that it's all falling apart. Sean says, apparently the way that Johnny Depp spoke during his testimony is the way he speaks in real life. He speaks very slowly, as apparently he stuttered badly as a child. Well, okay.
Yeah.
We're finding out all this stuff about them. I mean, look, I do think it's an incredible distraction. You know, if you, and I did say a couple of weeks ago that I missed out on how entertaining this is. Because it really is. These two are totally insane. But I watched Ricky Gervais' Supernature, the new comedy special on Netflix.
Yeah.
That is good stuff. Forget about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. That is an excellent, excellent piece of work. It's really, really good.
Does he tear apart the woke culture?
Oh, yeah. He has a go at lots of people. The funniest part, in my opinion, is this thing he does about fat people. Oh, my God. It is hilarious. So, I mean, look, it's not really... The whole thing is probably... Let me just guess it at how long it is. It's about an hour, maybe just over an hour. But he does this thing about fat people being jolly. And that, to me, is really, really funny. The other thing that he does that's very, very funny is... He has a go at like religious people, and he talks about heaven and hell and like what's going to happen to you in the afterlife. That's pretty hilarious. He's, you know, he doesn't leave any stone unturned in terms of like talking about stuff that really a lot of people won't find funny. And he explains, he says, you know, if you don't find it funny, that doesn't mean it isn't funny. There are lots of people who will find it funny. It's just you personally don't like it, and therefore you personally don't have to watch his special, which is what I've said for years. Is that offense is taken, it's not something that, you know, you get up and give someone. So I thought he was awesome, and a lot of people saying he really does not give a fuck. Sean says Ricky Gervais
he's
does not care.
So real, he's so real. And there's so many things about him that I identify with. You know, his atheism and agnosticism for one, his love of cats for another, his absolute realistic stance on what's going to happen when we die.
He is hilarious about the cats, by the way.
Like his approach to fat people, him not being a skinny person at all.
The things he says about cats are hilarious. I mean, he talks about his cats for a long time, and he talks about dogs and how dogs will just be your friend after 5 seconds of knowing you. Like a dog will be your best friend and like give you a kidney.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing by telling you what's in the... He's hilarious. I forgot how good Ricky Gervais is. And like he even says at a certain number of points in the in the special, he's like, oh, we'll have to cut that out. Oh, we'll have to cut that out. You know, and then he says... Ah, well, Netflix have paid for this thing already. Fuck them. You know, that sort of thing. It's hilarious. Yeah. All right, so lots of good people joining in the conversation this morning for the first time. And if you've never been on the show before, I'm thrilled that you can be a part of it this morning. I would love to hear from you. You can drop us a comment in the comment section on YouTube. Also, we're going to be trying out, as I said, Facebook, Twitter. So give them a go. See which works better for you from a live streaming point of view this morning. We'll see which one you like the most. He also talks about his partner, Jane, who he's been with for 40 years. I think that's interesting because, you know, we don't really get to know too much about the Ricky, who's, you know, a private person and what he gets up to. He jokes quite a lot about being extremely rich and says, you know, he's very, very rich and he lives in this enormous house and, you know, he's got so much money, he doesn't actually care. He could open up a new gym contract every day and never go to the gym just because he's got all this money. But he's hilarious. And, I mean, I don't know if we've ever seen his partner, Jane, but she sounds hilarious too. She sounds like she gives him shit all the time. Very, very funny.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't marry an insipid person, that's for sure.
Oh, no. She wouldn't last. So, what did you do this weekend?
The highlight of my weekend was watching The Offer. I don't know if anyone's watching it at the moment.
It's what's that?
Dramatic kind of documentary style, but it's not. It's a series show, which is all around the filming and how the Godfather trilogy came about.
Oh, wow.
So set in... I think what's always amazing for me is, you know, when you're looking at a period piece, but it doesn't come up and say Paris 1945.
Yeah.
And you've got to try and put together in your head from memory when this is. And in my mind, I was thinking, this is definitely late 60s. And then there were some parts of it where I was thinking, this is 70s. Turns out 1972.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about how the Godfather trilogy came about. The hoops, the mafia hoops that the director,
Francis Ford Coppola,
writers, he was the co-writer. It was Mario Puzo, who wrote the book, and then it was Francis Ford Coppola who co-wrote the screenplay. It follows how the two of them get together and try and put this movie together. It follows the threats that they received from the mafia, how the Italians were completely outraged by the book.
Really?
Saying this paints us in a bad light. Yeah, absolutely. Huh. And at the forefront of this push was Frank Sinatra. Now, I always kind of saw him as quite an insipid person, speaking of insipid people.
Really? You didn't know that he was tied to the mob?
Yeah, who kind of sang love songs and that was about it.
No, he was hardcore.
He was furious about this and spearheaded the campaign to try and not firstly get the book out of publishing,
right?
But then also not have the movie made. The threats that came from him were incredible. He hated this. So, yeah, it's just beautifully put together. It also highlights how women also held powerful roles in this. It shows the secretary and the casting director who made it their business to know everything about everyone in Hollywood. And it's interesting how the Italians said, okay, you can go ahead with this movie.
Right.
But you have to remove the word mafia from the script. So as a viewer, you're thinking, oh my God, this movie's going to be screwed, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the mafia. And then you see the producer phoning the writers and saying, by the way, how many times is the word mafia used in the script? And Francis Ford Coppola says, I think it's once.
Oh, wow. So they only had to take it out once.
Can you just take that one word out? He's like, yeah, sure, no problem. And that's how the movie was cleared.
Phenomenal. That's how they negotiated.
The Italians were given the script to read. And I don't know, you know, how much of this
is. Who are these Italians? Is it like the actual mafia, or was it Frank Sinatra, or was it just a bunch of
not Frank
people
Sinatra,
from Little Italy?
It's like the leader of
the leader of
again,
the Italians.
You know, you don't want to use the word mafia, but the leader.
Yeah. Well,
and then so obviously this got me into starting to watch the mafia, the Godfather series.
Right.
And so I'm halfway through the first one, just watching it again. I mean, Marlon Brando was obviously the Don.
Yeah, he was Don Vito Corleone.
And this series goes into how the people behind the scenes went to Marlon Brando's house.
Yeah.
And said to him, you know, will you get onto this movie? Because a lot of people turned it down.
Yeah.
Italians turned it down because of the pressure that they were facing. And him... how he goes into a little corner and uses shoe polish during this informal meeting.
Right.
Uses shoe polish and a brush to darken his hair and turns around and just becomes the Don.
Oh, wow. But he was,
and
you know,
on this accent.
So Marlon Brando was a total nutcase. I mean, he was completely, you think Johnny Depp is crazy on the stand here with this Amber Heard situation. Like, Marlon Brando was such a big star, and he was terribly eccentric. He used to do all the weirdest things. And I mean, he lived a large life, right? He was a proper Hollywood star at the time that being a Hollywood star was just the biggest thing ever. And if you follow his life story, I mean, towards the end where we saw him in a bunch of movies where he was already quite an old man, you know, when he was younger, like, he was the biggest thing in the world. Marlon Brando was... Yeah, he was sleeping with every woman in Hollywood who looked like anything. He had so much money. He had this incredible lifestyle. He was really living large. And by the time The Godfather rolled around, he didn't actually need that at all.
No, he was very, very demanding at the time. And you know, the producers were scared of bringing him on because even Paramount Pictures said, oh, we really don't want to work with him.
Yeah, he was difficult.
You know, he's difficult. And then, of course, there's Robert De Niro, who at this stage, we need to remember, was the first time that we ever saw Robert De Niro. He was really, really young.
And Al Pacino.
And the guy.
You know, in the later ones.
Yes, Al Pacino's in there too. Yeah. And, you know, Robert De Niro's role becomes increasingly important throughout the movies. And the actor who plays Robert De Niro is really good. He's got the
actor who plays Robert De Niro. Down. Oh, you mean, okay, so when you're talking about this is like a documentary, but it's reenacted.
It's a drama. It's
okay, I got you. And this is called The Offer.
The Offer.
Famously, there's that line that Don Vito Corleone says where he goes, "I'm going to make you an offer that you can't refuse." So that's obviously where it comes from.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Well, a lot of people...
Absolutely brilliant.
A lot of people are saying that The Godfather is easily their favorite mafia movie ever. I've watched all three. I absolutely love it. I mean, I think that the second one is actually the best one, in my opinion. I mean, who cares what I think? But having seen it, you know, I must have seen it like 3 or 4 times. I just think it's the most beautifully written story. And it's incredibly detailed. And all those characters, I mean, you know, you've got the family themselves, then you've got all their underbosses, and you've got the Jewish mafia, then you've got the Italian mafia. You've got, I mean, so many incredibly detailed characters that they've clearly, you know, they would have sat and worked and reworked that script a couple of times to get it exactly right. It's just absolutely brilliant. So Gary reminds me here, Marlon Brando bought a whole island for $270,000. Some strange shit went on there. Oh, you bet.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, so up we get. We start our day 23 after 6. If you're watching the clock for some reason this morning, we've got a full week ahead of us. And then we're properly into the month of June, which is cold. Apparently, it's going to be 1 degree on Wednesday. That was according to one of the comments earlier.
It's so, 3 right now.
Oh my God! Really?
Yeah, 3. I went outside and couldn't understand why I was in pain, and then I looked at the weather app.
Jesus, not good. All right, so a couple of things to talk about this morning. Some guy apparently did an amber turd in a Markham's store in Cape Town.
Yep. A man defecated inside the Markham's store on the Markham's floor.
So we thought people wearing sleepwear to spa was a problem. But evidently, that's nowhere near the problem that we have in Markham's in Cape Town. So what, did he just drop trow and take a big shit?
Yeah, there's actually a photograph.
What is wrong with people?
So I don't know. The story is kind of fresh, and pardon the pun. It's not really known what's behind all of this. So everyone jumped to the conclusion that this was an employee.
Yeah,
but
disgruntled.
The Fushini group.
Disgruntled employee. That's what we always hear, right? Disgruntled employee takes shit on boss's desk.
So the Fushini store group, rather, has come forward and said, you know, Markham is aware of this incident in which a member of the public defecated in the Zevenwacht store. And it's not an employee. So Twitter jumped to conclusions when this photograph was going around. It's amazing how people make up these stories.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Oh, yes.
They said, no, apparently it's an employee, and he was told that he wasn't allowed to go on a bathroom break. So everyone's like, shame, this poor guy, and, you know, damn the Fushini group and damn Markham. In the meantime, they've come back and said, no, it was a member of the public. So that's all that we have at the moment.
What?
But the original photograph was put up with this emoji of a crying cloud saying it's so sad how this person wasn't allowed to use the loo. So I don't know what's happening here.
That's just incredible. It's such a strange thing to do. I mean, you know, if you're a dog, sure. You know, I'm dealing with a puppy at the moment and trying to house train her as a thing. But as a human, what's your excuse? Like what you must be angry. There must be something going on in your head, because even the most uncivilized human being knows to try to get into the bathroom, at least, you know? I mean, sometimes there are accidents, but really, this has got to be a disgruntled person. It's got to be someone who's got an issue. They wouldn't just do this, right?
Unless
they're totally crazy. I mean, there are mentally ill people who would do something like this.
I was thinking about it, and we've all been in a situation where it's been a bit like close to call. And the last thing you think about in those situations is taking off your clothing, right? You'd sooner do it in your pants.
I know.
Than drop your pants.
I know someone when we were growing up. One of my friends, he used to have to take off all of his clothes when he went for a shit.
I have a cousin who does
but
that.
He had to do everything had to come off. So he couldn't just like pull down his pants. It was important that he was totally naked when he went for a number two. I don't understand that. I've never thought about that as being a thing. I've never needed to. But I suppose like some people prefer to, you know, there are men who like to pee sitting down. I wouldn't know any of them, but they probably are out there somewhere. There are maybe women who prefer to use those what are those things called? The pee, whatever it is. She pee. There are probably women who like that. So what the hell do I know? But to do it on the floor in a shop, oof, very weird. There's got to be something going on there.
Yeah, if it was an emergency situation, I think one would have kept their clothes on. So that's why I agree with you and say that this is somebody who was angry about something or wanted to make a point. And if you look at the setting where he is, he's right next to one of the clothing racks.
Do they have CCTV footage of this?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
There is a photograph. I'm looking at it now.
Oh, my God.
And he's holding onto the clothing rack. But he's also in full view of the aisle in the mall. And right. there's even a woman walking past and kind of looking at what's going on. So he didn't try and hide it either.
You know, so Tracy says shitting on something is such a lizard brain reaction. Someone not able to articulate verbally what their emotions are. I think that's about right. I mean, it's just such a strange thing to do. It's such a weird, weird form of behavior. And it really is like the most disrespectful thing you can do as a human being, I think. Right? Mm. I'm trying to imagine what else would be worse.
Well, there's throwing of shoes. There's spitting. There's pulling zap signs. There's maybe mooning someone.
People at their very best behavior, right?
Yeah. But I think this is the bottom of the rail.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, let's take a look at some headlines this morning, see what's going on in the world. Pay attention to the really important things. So apparently two Hawks officers were arrested for allegedly supplying ammunition to a traditional healer. Talk about our own complicated stories. So apparently two Hawks officers and a traditional healer are behind bars after their arrest during a sting operation for alleged theft, possession, and dealing in ammunition. The two officers, a lieutenant colonel and a captain, based at national headquarters when the elite crime-busting unit in Pretoria released a statement to explain their arrest. The team executed a sting operation after receiving info that the lieutenant colonel, who works in supply chain, planned to deliver ammunition to a traditional healer in Soshanguve. The female traditional healer, 43, was subsequently arrested at her place of residence after an exchange was made. She was charged with illegal possession of ammunition and possession of suspected stolen property following the seizure of other items suspected to belong to the state. Now, we've got to ask, what does the traditional healer want with ammunition? I mean, it's not something that would be used in muti, right?
Yeah, you're not going to put it in a tea.
No, very odd. So we'll have to keep an eye on that story, but very, very strange behavior. Not quite as strange as taking a shit in a store, but pretty much there. So I mentioned the weather earlier. This is something that just, I feel so sorry for KZN. I mean, really, it just could not get any worse. So the South African Weather Service has issued another warning for damaging winds between 70 and 80 kilometers an hour along the coastal areas of KZN on Monday morning. So today, they predicted waves of between 4 and 6 meters between midnight and Sunday and 12 p.m. on Monday, resulting in very rough seas. The expected bad weather will hit Port Edward first and then spread north to Richards Bay. Yo.
Way.
Yeah. So if you're, I mean, what do we say to the people in KZN? They've been through enough, right?
It's just literally horrible. A sleepy province, and everyone was leaving them alone. And now
they have to deal with this shit. It's unbelievable. All right, what else have we got in the news? Let me see what we've got here for you. SARS have warned of a new wallet scam targeting South Africans. There are so many people trying to steal your money at the moment. Have you noticed this?
Well, look at the unemployment rate, and then, I mean, it's no excuse for crime, but people are desperate.
Have you had any scams recently that, you know, where people, not just the normal phishing, where they send you an email or whatever, any scams on your side?
There was the one I mentioned where someone was trying to pay via PayPal for an item that I was selling on Gumtree, and they turned out to be scammers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's about it. I mean, I get emails and SMSs all the time about my inheritance, which is now sitting in the billions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got one of those the other day and I was like, oh, I didn't know that aunt had died. In fact, I didn't even know I had that aunt. It's very weird, though. There are I was talking to someone over the weekend about the danger of having your crypto wallet on your phone, right? Because obviously if you lose your phone, very often, that is the only place you have your crypto wallet. You don't know how to access it otherwise. So you need to, and I hate to be one of these people. It's like, you know, when your grandmother says to you, you know, you should really look after your money and keep your wallet in your front pocket and all that shit. But it is like that. You have to pay attention and rather think of the backup plan now in case something goes missing or someone steals something. Because it's too late once it's happened.
It's Even now, I mean, one of my clients deals in AI in the banking sector in London. And it's interesting how NFTs are now being stolen, right?
Oh, yeah.
And for the first time, well, to give you an example, Seth Green, the little famous actor, he hasn't done a lot in his career.
He's well enough known. He's well enough known, yeah.
Yeah, he bought an ape and based an entire movie around this, or series. Was it a series? Yeah.
When you say an ape, you mean the NFT ape. You don't mean the
NFT ape.
He didn't go to the zoo and like choose an ape. Yeah, I got you.
No. He made this entire series around it. It was almost wrapping up filming, and somebody scammed him and stole the ape.
Oh boy.
So now the TV series is as good as dead because he no longer owns the rights to it, because as soon as somebody steals it, they have the rights.
Yeah. Well, also, I think this NFT thing is surely with the collapse of you know, the economy in America, it's just not a priority anymore. NFTs, they were a big thing while things were going well and people were making money on the stock market and Bitcoin was up. Now I don't see that happening. I think NFTs have gone right to the back of the queue again. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, there's still a lot of activity, and it's a great place for criminals at the moment, because not even the courts are fully caught up yet with what NFTs are and value is.
I can't even explain it to someone if they ask me what an NFT is. And, you know, usually if you can't explain something, not only does it mean you don't understand it, but it often means that maybe it's not that easy to explain, full stop. So,
yeah.
All right. So SARS have received reports about phishing attempts that indicate tax payments should be made to blockchain wallets. The notification, which purports to be from SARS, encourages taxpayers to settle outstanding debts to a blockchain wallet address, or they can face blacklisting. The revenue collector noted that members of the public are randomly emailed with false spoof emails made to look as if they come from SARS, obviously, but they are in fact fraudulent emails that are aimed at unsuspecting taxpayers with, you know, the intention of making them part with personal information like account details, or they make them do actual payments. So do not fall for this stuff. Apparently, according to SARS, these are the steps you must take. I mean, far be it for us to do SARS's dirty work, but let's do it this morning. You know, I don't want people to suffer. So even though we hate SARS, I'll help you. Taxpayers should not open or respond to emails from unknown sources. Right. So obviously what I always do is I just check the email address itself. They can sometimes hide it. But if it's like a, you know, SARS revenue, blah, 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 23444@gmail.com. You pretty much guarantee that's bullshit, right? Why would they be doing that? So they say, beware of emails that ask for personal, tax, banking, and e-filing details, like login credentials, passwords, PINs, credit, debit card information, etc. Obviously, those are people who are trying to get at your stuff. SARS will never request your banking details in any communication that you receive via post, email, or SMS. However, for the purpose of telephonic engagement and authentication, they will verify your personal details. Importantly, SARS will not send you any hyperlinks to other websites, even those of banks. Okay, so remember that. Mm. They also say that they do not send HTML attachments. They do not send false SMSs. And they will never ask for your credit card details. So don't fall for that stuff. That's according to those horrible people at SARS. But there are even more horrible people trying to steal your money. Of course, SARS steals your money, right. but they're allowed to by law. So now you know. Finally, the ANC is pushing for big changes to the TV rules in South Africa. Listen to this. The ruling ANC is pushing for sweeping changes around TV regulations, including making key sports free to watch. So among other changes, they want a ban on selling exclusive broadcasting rights, while matches involving national teams such as the Springboks should be available to the SABC either for free or at a reduced cost. The ANC is also pushing for these games to be shown live rather than on delay. The proposed changes, which are included in a variety of circulated documents, would have a direct impact on broadcasting group MultiChoice and DSTV, which is seen as the premium sports broadcaster in the country. It would also bolster the South African Broadcasting Corporation, which has seen TV license collections plummet in recent years. As the ANC, we are saying, let's have a discussion to ensure that especially the sports of national interest are watched by all South Africans, said Nkeke Kekana, who is the head of the ANC's Subcommittee on Communications. Nkeke Kekana. That's a lot of K's and E's, right?
It's a lot of cake.
Yeah.
Nkeke Kekana.
Right. So they also want to introduce a new tax to replace the TV license fee. The proposal, this is where I fall off the... I'm sorry. This is where I get. Here we go again.
Hold on. Do you pay your TV license still, by the way?
Please.
Or have you ever?
No. I did.
You know I'm a conformist, right?
You do, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, you do. Of course you do. You're such a nerd. Do you have a monthly debit order, or how does it work for you?
It's an annual debit order. It's an annual one.
How much?
Oh, it's in the low hundreds. Very low hundreds.
Well, I don't know that that's worth it, Leanne. But here we are. So conformists like you will be forced to pay a new tax. It is included in the new broadcaster's, the national broadcaster's latest annual performance plan, which will see the implementation of a technology-neutral public media levy to replace the existing TV license. They noted that the levy would be device-independent, meaning South Africans who do not have a television will still be required to contribute. Why?
Oh, my word.
Why would we want to do that? I have never... Let me tell you something. I don't watch TV full stop, right?
Mm.
I told you, I haven't watched any TV this year. I watched the Netflix special for Ricky Gervais last night on my laptop. I do not watch TV. I haven't switched on my TV more than once this year. And we're almost halfway through.
So now,
it's
not just about the device anymore. I mean, it's not about having a TV license. It's about what device you use to watch it on.
So what right does the SABC have to charge me a new tax when I'm only watching Netflix? I haven't watched TV, but I absolutely, positively have not watched SABC TV.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
So I do not understand how they think that that's going to be something anyone wants to do. Anyway, last thing, since we're doing a bunch of these local stories for this morning, the Health Professions Council of South Africa, the HPCSA, they arrested two fake doctors. They were selling fraudulent medical certificates. They're apparently taken into custody in Germiston. The Health Professions Council says it worked with law enforcement agencies after a community tip-off. The kind of medical certificates are basically bogus. They were making use of doctors who actually did not exist in terms of the register. So in a nutshell, these are bogus practitioners who were actually taking advantage of unsuspecting people in the public. You ever see those certificates on your doctor's wall and actually go, I wonder if those are real?
No, it's never crossed my mind.
You just assume they're real. You think, well, why would the doctor lie? Maybe you have to check. You should maybe go up to the magnifying glass and like check them out. Imagine how your doctor, you'd really annoy your doctor. Imagine you get to your doctor's rooms and you start poring over his certificates. He's like, excuse me, what are you doing? You're like, you're going to examine me. I'm going to examine you.
Some kind of decorated, big-headed surgeon.
Exactly.
You kind of tap on the glass and go,
right.
Is this real?
All right, so let's turn our attention, as we do on a Monday morning, to Dr. Hanan, who is ready to stand by and give us our edition this morning of It's Going to Be Okay. This is where we check in on the mental health of individuals and of all of us in general. On a Monday morning, first thing. Hey, Doc, how are you?
Hey, guys, I'm well. How are you doing?
Good, very good. It's nice to see you. So we received an anonymous email from somebody who wants some advice. So let me read it to you quickly. Okay. I'm a male in my 30s. I've been having an affair with a friend's wife for the past year and a half. He's not a close friend, but he is in our friend group, and I've known him for 20 years. I justify this to myself by saying I'm much better for her than he is. I'm in good physical shape. I have a successful career. I'm highly qualified. We complement each other perfectly. He is in poor shape, physically unattractive, and doesn't have many prospects for the future. It has become more of a secret relationship than a physical affair, and I've told her that she needs to leave him. She said she'd be fine, she would be with me if she could, and I was given the impression that she would get a divorce, but this hasn't happened. She has tried to have the conversation with her husband, but she kept having excuses as to why she couldn't do this, ranging from family and social stigma to not having the emotional strength to do it. All this time, we've continued to see each other, but we've had constant fights about her still being with him, because it means we can't see each other often, and she still does normal couples activities with him. They don't have sex, apart from maybe once every 6 months, when she feels obligated. I love her, I see a future with her, but an emotional turmoil like this is debilitating. Am I a terrible person for not feeling guilty about this, or not being able to break it off? Wow. Sure. So, Doc, what do we do? What do we do here? First of all, tell us what's going on psychologically, perhaps with her and with him. You haven't met these people, so you're guessing a lot of this, but I'm sure that you've heard similar situations.
I've heard many similar situations, and I do wish he was on the show so I could question some of his justification. But what's interesting is that we have to remember that the human mind can justify pretty much anything, which is a complex mechanism that makes us relinquish guilt. It just makes us not feel guilty anymore because we can justify why we are in a substandard relationship, why we're in a substandard job, why we give ourselves permission to, you know, cross a red robot and break the law or do something bad to somebody else.
Yes.
So it allows us to sleep well at night, which is an incredible mechanism, but it just gets us stuck. Because now I can stay stuck in a substandard relationship. I can stay stuck in a substandard job. Uh-huh. I can stay stuck acting in ways that are quite consequential for my future. So he's justifying, saying I'm better for her. I'm in a better shape. I can offer her what her husband can't offer her. I'm not such a great friend with the husband, so it doesn't really matter. So he's justifying his behavior, which is a great complex, as I said, human phenomena, but maybe doesn't serve him well. But to answer his question, is he a horrible person? Well, let's just take the judgment aside for 2 seconds. I like to advise my patients to abide by certain basic tenets in living life. And if you feel that you should be living life lying, stealing, cheating, and you think that serves you in the long run, well, then you're doing the right thing. But obviously, you can't live that way. You got to live by particular rules that makes us civilized. And, you know, you were talking on the show about uncivilized behavior earlier. We got to live by certain predictable, consistent rules that serve you for the next 40 years.
Well, even Johnny Depp and Amber Heard that we were talking about last week, you know, this thing's wrapping up now. And we've seen some really uncivilized behavior going on there.
You can't live. It's psychologically, it's dysfunctional. So he asked, is he a bad person for not feeling guilty? He's not a bad person for not feeling guilty. It's just not a functional emotion to not feel certain things when you should be. So the way we judge dysfunction is we ask ourselves, or certainly I ask myself when I see my patients, is, do you feel the appropriate emotion in the appropriate environment? So do you feel guilt when you should? Do you feel anger when you should? Do you feel sad when you should? Do you feel anxious when you should? And if the answer is yes, then you're a functional person. These feelings, there's nothing wrong with them as long as they come up in the right context. To feel anxiety when the lion is in the room is very functional. To feel guilty when I hurt somebody that is within my social circle is very good because it helps me go and correct that behavior. So appropriate emotion, reasonable emotions in the right environments are very good. When you don't feel those emotions, when you don't feel guilt when you should, or anxious or sad or insecure or frustrated, then that becomes dysfunctional because your behavior is not going to be guided in the right direction. But
right.
The most important thing that I just want to highlight is act in ways that are consistent and service your long-term goal. how many times on the show do we bring up the difference between kids and adults, and where kids are guided by their emotions, what I want, me, me, me right now, versus adults that are guided by the long-term goal. You should direct your behaviors not towards what I want right now, but rather what will service the long-term goal. So if this services his long-term goal, by the way, and I've seen situations, to be honest, where you meet somebody, the other person is married, and you go, you know what, I want to be with this person, and the other person wants to be with me, and that will service our long-term goal for the next 40 years. That's an appropriate and a reasonable conversation to be had. But you don't do things behind your back just to satisfy an immediate need whilst hurting somebody else. That is not appropriate.
All right. Let me just ask you this. First of all, is there any justification, because he compares himself to the other guy and he says he's better off, he's better looking, he's got prospects, his future's bright, the other guy's fat and not very attractive, and he says he hasn't got any prospects. Now, he's weighing himself up against this guy, but it seems like the woman in this case is not in any hurry to break it off with the guy that she's with.
Such a waste. I wish they were both on the show. I would ask him first, what do you want? What do you want? Do you want to test it out? Do you want to see whether she can offer you maybe something that somebody else can't? And I would ask her the same thing.
So I think he's been, and again, I don't want to try and read tea leaves here, but I think he's been very clear. He wants her to break up with the other guy and be with him. He wants this.
For what? But the question is for what? So is it a short-term stint? Do you feel that she can service? Do you have kids? Do you think she can service you as a wife, as a mother to your kids? Does she have kids herself? Do you think he can be a better father to the kids? Do you think he can support her with more financial resources, emotional resources, intellectual resources?
I mean, again, I'm just going to quote here. He says, I love her and I see a future with her.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's thinking long term. So then is he expecting her to just dump this other guy? And the reason that she might not be doing it, again, you're the psychologist. I'm just looking at this from the outside. If she's not rushing to break it off with the guy who she's currently married to, maybe she doesn't really want to. Maybe she's not taking him seriously.
Right. I would ask her the same question. What's your intention in this? Again, can he offer you something in the future that your husband can't? Maybe it is worth your while to investigate whether there's somebody out there that's a better fit for you than your current situation is. If there are kids involved, that brings another new dimension, another new level to this whole story. What I want to highlight that will be valuable to the people that are listening, that are perhaps going through the same thing. Just remember, when you date somebody that's in another relationship, you experience them in a particular way and you think this is how they are. But in reality, once they end up with you and they wake up in the morning with you and they go through stress with you and they get home after a terrible day with you and they have a fight with their mother and they come home to you, it's a little bit different. So experiencing a person in a particular environment and a situation, you think you know them, but the reality is you actually don't know the full spectrum. So you might go, well, I want to, I know this person really well because I've been having an affair with them for the past 3 years. Yes, you know them really well as a person that you've been having an affair with for the past 3 years, period. But if you want to end up with somebody, you must be able to get to know them in different contexts, in different environments, because we are different in different situations. Just as a side note, that's quite important here. You know, human personality is not static. If you had to write a personality test, let's say the most comprehensive personality test ever written, a million questions, and it spits out a result, and it says to you, you are this mature, you are this intelligent, you are this introverted, you are this insightful. It plots you on a graph. But in reality, guys, it's very different because we are different in different environments. In some environments, I'm mature. In other environments, I'm immature. In some environments, I'm insightful. Other environments, superficial. Some environments, introverted, and some environments, extroverted.
Right.
And that is pretty normal. We adapt to the environment. So to say you are X is like saying to a chameleon, you are green. And by telling a chameleon to be green, you're taking the essence away from a chameleon. Us as human beings, we can be very different in different environments. And when you're dating somebody that's in a marriage, you are seeing them as green. But if you want to have see the full spectrum, you want to see them also as blue and as red and as yellow in different contexts, in different environments, which is just not available to you when you're dating them as they're married.
Right.
So just be careful of labeling and saying, I know this person, when in reality you don't really. But the only way to test it is to date them outside of the marriage, which is a gamble for everybody, especially when you're breaking up a family.
How about this from Parallel Parking, who says, how much of her desirability is the fact that she's not really available?
Yeah, the chase is real. The chase is real. You know, we like to chase. We like to try to get something that is scarce and not available to us. You know, marketers use it to perfection. You know?
Yeah.
3 hours left till the special's over.
Right.
Only two items left before it runs out. You know, so, and then we chase because, you know, us as human beings, we're programmed to have abundance. We programmed to have endless of something. And the moment society, the moment the environment says, well, you can't have it all, you can only have X, suddenly we rush to get it. So when she's not available, and the fact that she's not available could definitely psychologically spur an interest and motivation to go and chase her. For sure, that could be a factor.
So Tracy says this, I'd like you to comment on this one before we wrap it up. By not leaving his friend, not being able to make the hard decisions, i.e. leaving him, divorcing, moving out, explaining to family, etc., she'll never leave him. It's easier for her to stay in the marriage. You agree with that?
Well, the most difficult thing in the world, is change. The human brain doesn't like to change, like to stay stuck with what it knows.
Right.
We don't create what we want. We just recreate what we know. We just keep on repeating familiarity. And I would rather, and I'm saying this as a psychological fact, people would rather stay in an environment that is unhealthy than jump into something that's better. Because of that, the phenomena called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is my brain trying to adjust to a new reality.
Right.
So for somebody to move to a different environment, to a different person, to a different reality, the positives and the carrot, so to speak, needs to be so much more significant than the stick of what you're getting in this relationship that it must be worth your while. There must be more motivation, much more of a pull. To make a relationship, to make somebody jump out of a relationship, and I talk to people that perhaps want to leave, you know, people that are thinking about immigration. And it links, because I tell them something very similar to people that want to leave relationships. I say, to leave relationship, there must be a pull and there must be a push. Otherwise, it makes it very, very difficult to jump ship. A pull towards where you're going and a push from where you're at. If it's just a pull, it's not enough because you're always going to go, well, I regret my decision. And if it's just a push, well, you don't know what's on the other side. So make sure that the pull is real and make sure that the push is significant to make the jump much more significant.
That's such a good point. Leanne, anything you want to throw in before we say goodbye to Dr. Kanan?
No, it's so much of what you're saying I can relate to. I think there's also this, I don't know how to put it into words, and perhaps you can help me. But when you're having an affair with a married person, there's this like phenomenon or the way that you feel, which makes you think, wow, I'm so much better than that other person. If he's willing to disregard the fact that he's married to this woman and go for me, that makes me feel really special. I must be something.
Right. So one of the 8 non-negotiable, let's call it boxes that needs to be ticked in any relationship is it's a very important, very deep psychological need, is the need to feel desired. And when somebody desires you and chooses you over their partner, that really pushes on that button, that psychological button of, I am desired. I am the chosen one. But remember, in the long term, that means nothing. It's just because somebody's choosing you now, it doesn't mean they'll choose you in a minute from now. So that feeling that you think is really like will serve you for the long term, wow. It's not really serving you. It's just an illusion for the long term. It's just like having a, it's like having a chocolate cake and think that you'll be satiated for the next 50 years.
Right.
Well, that chocolate cake is an illusion. It tells you, it makes you feel really good now, but in 3 minutes time, you'll be hungry for more. The same thing for the feeling of being desired when somebody has chosen to be married to somebody else.
Sure. Well, advice for this guy, just to cap it all. I mean, you asked, you know, he's got to ask himself some tough questions, but what would you suggest is the best course of action for him now? Give up on this girl? Or?
No, very simple. To have an honest, once-off conversation with this woman, ask her what does she desire, and her answer will be either, I want to be with you, or any other answer means, I don't want to be with you. So if she is yes, maybe, I don't know, let's just see, it means no. So she either wants to be with you, and you can pursue that avenue, or any other answer means you've got to let her go and find somebody that wants to be with you.
Well, Anonymous, I hope that helps you. Dr. Hanan, always good to see you, and thank you for joining us this Monday morning. We'll catch up with you
guys
in a week's time. There he is, Dr. Hanan Bushkin. You can obviously send us an email if you have some kind of issue you need resolved. Maybe you've got, I don't know, a complicated question. You can remain anonymous too. You can also send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to hear from you. It is 7 o'clock. On a Monday morning at the end of May, let's get ready for winter. It's here, whether you like it or not. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. CliffCentral.com.